Welcome, sound aficionados, to Southern View Sound and Music's podcast series, Studio V. Mr. V, Paul Vastola, will be exploring sound and music with an emphasis on the grand piano and people who know and appreciate this amazing instrument. Today, he'll be visiting Colorado Springs resident, pianist, and arranger Steve Barta. Steve and Paul have a long history of collaboration on Steve's many recording projects, from solo piano to full orchestra works. Steve has worked in the studio and on stage with world-class flautist Herbie Mann, and more recently, Hubert Laws. They recently collaborated on a fully orchestrated version of Claude Bolling's classic composition, Suite for Flute and Jazz Piano Trio, bringing a new perspective to the work. Let's join Steve and Paul as they talk piano and beyond.
Start with your early exposure to the piano.
Oh, wow. My first exposure to the piano was when the piano tuner came over to the house. I remember he charged $35 to tune the piano. It was a Henry H. Miller piano upright. And I think in my whole lifetime, my mom had it tuned once.
Back then, we didn't know the piano was in tune or out of tune.
No.
This is something that's astounding to me that I didn't realize if the piano was in tune. I just kind of played it and we accepted that, right?
So my first exposure really was that piano tuner. And I remember, I'm telling you, I remember asking him, how do you know what, and he would like, he was very kind. He explained to me, I can hear the waveforms and this, and you know, I tuned two pianos just this morning.
A professional tuner.
Yeah. Wow. That was the first exposure.
Did you take lessons?
I did. As a very young child, I took for a very short time. I think I retired around 11. and then I really didn't get serious about piano and educating myself as to like harmonic chordal structures, things like that, until I was in college. I was like 21 when I really feel like I started the path when I was like 21, pretty late. But yeah, I had a few lessons, a little exposure, but I couldn't tell you beyond what a major triad was.
What was your family's influence on you as far as
your huge, huge. My dad played the organ. Everyone in my family played an instrument. My brother played trombone, another one played trumpet, another one played flute, sister played clarinet. My mom was the only one in the family that didn't play, so it was actually very sweet. There was practice started about 7 a.m. around our house in the basement. Everybody was pounding out something.
So a musical family.
Yeah.
In college, you studied the instrument?
I did. I started studying piano and practicing and transcribing. I have a pretty good ear, so I figured out chord structures by transcribing off of records and then writing chord structures down on staff paper and then figuring out how you got a certain feeling or a certain sound with a certain chord inversion. Kind of the backwoods way of doing it, but it was my way.
Fascinating. Were you in bands?
I was. I played organ in some of the bands, trombone in some of the bands. Yeah, Hammond B3, Rhodes, clavinet, Horner D6 clav.
The B3?
Yeah. Yeah, I started out with an M3. Remember the M3?
Not quite as glorious as the B3.
Not
but
nearly
still
as glorious, but it was a Hammond.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, funny wow. Stuff. I haven't thought about this in a long time, Paul.
That's cool.
Yeah.
What kind of experience did you have in bands?
My brother played trumpet. I played trombone. And then we had two guitars, bass drum, keyboardist. A fairly big band, actually. It's probably a 6-7-piece band. And we played things like Chicago, BS&T, Cold Blood. I don't know if you remember that group. Played a lot of their material.
Tell me BS&T.
Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Okay. Right. Come on.
Horn, the horn band.
Come on.
I wasn't in a horn band.
That shop talk for Blood, yeah. Sweat, and Tears. Right, right. Sorry. That was around the area of the jazz, the Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Chicago, that whole thing.
We go back quite a ways.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I first moved to Colorado in the Springs, you were the one that gave me a chance in doing some session work on commercials and then some arranging and then some writing. And we kind of gradually started working together more in the area of, you know, what you were doing.
Well, let's go back.
How far you want to go back?
My earliest memory of you has to do with Lee Trees.
Yeah.
Tell me about what you were doing with Lee Trees.
Phenomenal. In fact, I'm working, Lee's going to be the guitarist on this song that I'm going to be recording with you, hopefully. Met him through, he put an ad in a paper up in Boulder. It said, looking for a piano player. And I called him and heard his material and absolutely fell in love with his writing and his lyrics. And I never heard anybody write music like Lee wrote music. It was so fresh and new to me. When I started doing some serious recording, I was fortunate enough to be able to take some of his material and put my arrangements on several of his songs. And then recorded them with Herbie Mann and started doing the Brazilian thing.
Yeah. I'm trying to think how we started our recording relationship.
I found you. I just wanted to learn and to kind of hang out. And I think you finally one day said to me, you want to try and lay a track down and I on a commercial. And I did. And you gave me a chance. I probably had 20 takes for the first 30-second commercial. But that's where it kind of started. And then, that's Paul. That's where I learned to write for strings, for orchestra. So there were a lot of firsts for me. And you gave me those chances, really. You took a risk and said, okay, yeah, here's a commercial, see what you can, I need it for strings and this and that, and I'd write it and come back, and my intuition for writing and arranging was pretty good.
Yeah, so, I want to talk string arranging too in a little bit here.
Yeah, yeah.
So as I remember growing as a recordist and you growing as a pianist, kind of simultaneously.
I think you were always ahead of my curve a little bit there, Paul. But
thank you.
But yeah, I mean, there were some projects I think that I brought into the studio that were pushing the edge of how many mics you had in the studio, you know.
One of my early memories of our collaboration, which is really very dear to me, was you asked me to record an ensemble at the Pikes Peak Center.
Yes, that was my first session. Yeah, good memory.
What was that all about?
Well, that was my very first release. It was a recording called Rossport, and it was inspired by a place up in Canada on the North Shore of Lake Superior. They were my very first compositions. I rented the Pikes Peak Center, and you, Baffle Boots, in between all us musicians. Actually, it was a digital recording because you recorded on the track of a beta tape. I still have those tapes.
You remember that?
Yes, yeah.
It was an experimental digital recording. It was a Betamax.
Yep.
We had a little converter that turned the sounds into digital and printed it on the video
tracks. Let me tell you, man, I am so proud of that recording. That recording, if I was to put that on today and listen to it, the quality and the sound and the playing was exquisite. Yeah. We had Kim Stone on bass, unbelievable bassist, Barry Wedgel on guitar, Mark Rose on sax, me on piano. I think that was it. There were probably four or five of us, and everything was live, all live. We didn't overdub anything.
I was very nervous on that undertaking. Yeah. And then the Beta Hi-Fi was two tracks of good audio that accompanied the video. So we actually had four channels going down. But I was mixing it from in back of the Pikes Peak Center.
Yeah.
What was great about that was they had a beautiful microphones and they had that great Steinway. Right, didn't they have
9-foot Steinway and the reverb? You put two mics vertical, I don't know, maybe 25 feet up in the center of the room, I remember, to catch the ambiance. The sound is It's a glorious sound.
It was magic.
That piano, yeah. Is, that recording still speaks to me. And that was in 1989.
The piano, the Shep's microphones that they owned there, all those things aided in how wonderfully that came out.
It was a very special moment, but I mean, you were the one... You were the one that caught the magic and was able to document it.
This isn't about me.
I really can't talk about what I've done in the studio and talk about without including you in it, because you've been such a huge part of what I've recorded in my career. I mean, not all of my projects, most of my projects, though.
Something I'm extremely proud of, too. Well, Steve, after all the nostalgic discussion about our first recording session together at the Pikes Peak Center, I have to play something from that day because I just reflect back so fondly on it. The piece I'm going to feature is called Blooming Prairie. Thank you. it is so gratifying when something that comes from so early in our recording career holds up this well. Love it. So at some point, you acquired a Steinway B.
I did.
And it changed your musical life and my perception of it, because your playing and composing literally exploded at that point. So talk about the acquisition of that and what it did for you.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I did a concert with Herbie Mann and Stan Getz in the Rippingtons and at the Pikes Peak Center. And on a break, there was... So you want to know the story of how I got the piano. Okay, I went in the basement of the Pikes Peak Center on a break, and I saw this piano way back in the corner under this cover, and I took the cover off, and it was a Steinway Model B 7-foot piano, and I was like, what is this doing here? And so I contacted the manager of the symphony. Bee Vredenburg was her name, and I went to Bee and I said, Bee, I have a deal to offer you. If you let me take this piano, I will care for it and tune it and insure it, and, you know, because pianos are meant to be played. They're not meant to be stored, because they have brass bushings and it makes the piano sluggish, and they're really designed to be played, right? And Bee was totally on board with that, and I just said, the only thing I would like is when someone does put an offer to buy it, I get first right. So the day came where Colorado College called her and said, we want to buy that Steinway Model B piano. And she called me, and I said, let me see how much money I can come up with by the end of the day. And I begged, borrowed, and not quite stole everyone I knew to pitch in money for me to buy this thing, and I did, and I bought it. And then about some years later, I was able to send it back to New York to the Steinway factory to have it completely restored. And I connected immediately with the piano, and I really rarely used electronics ever again.
So. You were like launched by that instrument,
yes,
as far
yeah.
as I could see.
Yeah, I would say that's true.
Wow. Yeah. What shape was it in when you got it?
It wasn't in bad shape. It needed several tunings. It needed work, but I couldn't afford to do any work on it, so it didn't really matter. It was such a beautiful piano. And I made one recording on it. I realized after that recording it really needed major work. That's when I had it rebuilt.
So you sent it to New York. How long did that process take?
8 months. They had it for 8 months. And when I got it back, it was a brand new piano.
Well, sadly, we couldn't use that piano in a lot of our projects because it was at your home.
Right.
We were using the C7 at Rocky Mountain Recorders.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty buttery piano.
Love the piano.
1986 C7. Yeah. And I know that you had a good affinity with that piano.
I love that piano. That piano had very great sound, and I love the feel. I still do. Love the feel of the Yamaha keyboard. I love the Steinway sound, but the feel of the keyboard on the Yamaha, I still, something about it, I don't know if it's the depth, I'm not exactly sure what it is.
I'm going to have to go with you on that particular analysis, because sometimes I'll go and sit and play a Steinway in a store or something,
right.
And this feels kind of funny. The keys feel different to me. But, you know, when I listen to Hornsby, Mark Cohen,
yep.
you know, walking in Memphis,
yep.
and I hear that Steinway, it's magic.
Yeah, I mean, the sound, in my opinion, is unbeatable. But the Yamaha does have, that Yamaha that you have, this, I love the sound of it, and I love the feel of it. I had no issue with that piano.
We know the delicate recording of a grand piano is fraught with problems because of the dampers and the pedal noises.
Right.
And you and I worked with the technician. We found clunks, we found squeaks and bothersome buzzes. And I learned a lot about the mechanics of the instrument around that time. How about you?
In recording, I became acutely aware of pedaling technique and verbal noises, things like that. That later on in my career, I didn't really worry about that stuff anymore. I still don't. If I make a noise, I make a noise. It is what it is. But it's all part of it, really. Working with the grand piano is a very different animal than plugging a DX7 into the board and laying down your piano part. And I think that that's what I love about recording the grand piano. And then, you know, when I started writing and needing strings on my recording, my projects always got more larger and more expensive. And, you know, I'd hire, you know, the last project I did with the Suite for Flute project I did in LA was huge project. I had probably almost 50 people on that recording. The quartet, the strings, the brass, the woodwinds. And that gave me a live, really nice, beautiful live sound, but more control over the mix. Yeah.
What studio were you in at that time?
I recorded that at Entourage, North Hollywood.
I'm guessing that was a heck of an investment.
Oh, yeah. They were worth every penny, though, because when we record, they do all the movie stuff, okay, Paul? When Downbeat came, we were recording. We weren't running the parts. First time Downbeat 1 was take 1. And that's, by the way, the first time I heard it. Because when I did my writing, I never listened back through a program, because you can do that. You can hear stuff back through Sibelius or Finale or whatever you're orchestrating and hear it back. I never did that because it's just not even close to what I'm hearing in my head. The risk and the excitement for me in the project was really after a year of writing, finally hearing it for the very first time when we're laying tracks.
So you just heard it in your head,
yeah,
a la Beethoven.
Interesting conversation, because it kind of goes back to that whole, you're writing for orchestra and you hear the arrangement, you get the woodwinds and you get your brass, and it's pretty logical to me.
To a non-composer, that stuff is intimidatingly complex.
It's complex. Yeah, this project was. Yeah, there were 7 movements. I mean, the score is thick. there's a lot of notes flying around. I'm sure you know the classic Suite for Flute and Jazz Piano. It was Claude Bolling wrote it, Jean-Pierre Rampal on flute. It was released in 1975, and it was not well accepted by the world, but yet it sold millions of copies. Now, why is that? You know, the classical people were saying, that's not classical, and the jazz people were saying, well, that's not jazz. But Claude Bolling, in his writing and in his arranging, the original arrangement was for quartet, piano, bass, drums, flute. And of course, you know, Jean-Pierre Rampal at the time was the best flautist in the world, classical flautist. Claude Bolling was a very good jazz pianist as well, and classical pianist. And so his music was pretty cutting edge. No one had written anything like that. And I first heard that recording in 1975 when it was released. I knew someday I would become involved with that piece again. And I didn't know how, I didn't know when, I didn't know where, I didn't know what it looked like. I just knew that I would be involved with that piece. And sure enough, 40 years later, the obsession hit me to take that and re-release it, but with full symphony orchestra. So I selected Hubert Laws, best flautist in the world, can play jazz, can play classical, you know, flowing the way it needed to go.
Did you cut that as a live date also?
I did, sort of the way we did the 12 Days recording. That recording for me was pivotal, because as long as you have a live feel on that, you can really put things on top of that, and you really would never know that that's those strings, those parts are overdubbed over that trio.
Okay, so after all that buildup and excitement, let's listen to a little bit of the symphonic arrangement of the Suite for Flute and Jazz Piano by Claude Bolling, arranged by Steve Barton. That's just one movement from Steve's symphonic arrangement of Suite for Flute and Jazz Piano Trio. You know, I'm just enjoying this so much. I want to keep listening to stuff that Steve and I have recorded together. Ended up working with Herbie Mann, the famous flautist, and that was kind of your introduction to the bossa
Brazilian groove. Yeah,
we had fun with him in the studio.
Oh,
he was a challenge for me. Do you remember where he wanted to stand when he recorded? We couldn't have him out there in the studio with you guys. He didn't want to be out there. He wanted to be in the control room, listening on the speakers.
That's right. I remember he was in the control room when, because I remember the charts laying across the board.
I had him stand in the corner, in the back corner of the control room. We put the speakers down just where he could hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, when you're miking that, it's tight. The sound of the flute is real close to the mic. So the leakage was not a problem, but it was a challenge.
Yeah, and here's a guy who's made how many records? Dozens of records.
We were a little intimidated by him because he was a super pro, and we're these Denver, guys.
But he showed up, and he did it, and he wanted to do it, and he was there, and we did the music live, and it turned out beautiful. We had a great band, man.
In the early 90s, you and I started doing Christmas albums.
Yeah.
And I think that grew out of our really great relationship. We just enjoyed working together,
uh-huh.
And you started writing Christmas albums. We cut one pretty much every year.
We did.
I have a stack of them.
Yeah.
And
Noel was the first, solo piano. And then we did the thing with the Children's Chorale on that.
That Children's Chorale thing was something very special. One of my favorites that we did was called 1225.
Right.
Let's hear just a little bit about 1225. I'm going to play it.
Okay. Well, okay, 1225 is a Christmas carol that I wrote. My thought was, if I'm going to be recording all these Christmas songs and doing all this arranging, I should also be contributing. So I wrote this piece, and I called it 1225 because my birthday is on Christmas.
No shit.
Yep. 1225 is my birthday, and I thought, what a perfect name for the song. And so we recorded that, and then we put the chorale on there, and then later I recorded that with Deborah Hanson-Conant on harp.
Thank you.
formed Source Music around that time? Why did you start a music company?
I had these recordings, and I needed to market these recordings, sell these recordings. And so I started my own label, Source Music.
Let me say that those Christmas albums are like some of my favorite in my heart.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, oh,
nice,
absolutely. Man. When they will always come out on Christmas.
Yeah.
So another skill that you have is an arranger. I was really enamored by the pieces we recorded. In particular, we did one called Noel. Tell me about the string arrangement.
That's when I was really heavily into writing for strings only. And I found that arrangement easy to write and very quick. It happened very quick. When I finished that arrangement and I sat back and I listened to it, I really think of it as really egoless, if you will, and that it's a gift, really. I hear it and I write it down and that's it.
We acquired a pretty good-sized string ensemble for
that. Yeah, we did.
And when you came in, you were actually a little bit nervous about it because it had some cutting-edge voicings in it.
Yeah, that I still love that arrangement. It's funny you bring this up because I just heard that the other day. I was checking out some stuff on my site to make sure that the tracks were working, and I hit play on that. I was like, wow, still sounds good.
Magic.
But, you know, I have to tell you, that's one of the reasons I use real strings and real instruments and real piano, because I think what happens is music can become dated if you're using samplers and synthesizers and things like that. It becomes, you know, 15 years later, 20 years later, the old Fender Rhodes sound is old. But if it's done on a real piano, it's a real piano today as it was in 1989. And strings are as real today as they were back then. I'm attracted to that acoustic thing because it holds up.
Yeah, I'm going to want to play that.
Sweet. Yeah, it's on Three Ships recording, I think.
Well, I've got to admit, I'm a sucker for beautiful Christmas music. And even though it's not the Christmas season right now, I want to take a moment and play this, and I'd like our listeners to kind of tune in on the unique voices of all the strings in there. And this was one of my favorite string recordings that I've ever done. It's Noel.
Thank you.
One other big challenge that you brought to me was cutting the 12 Days of Christmas.
I remember the first track we started downbeat was at 10. I think by 10 minutes after 10, we had our first track. And I remember saying to myself, this is going to be a good day.
We recorded all of it.
Live.
Live, yeah. That was scary for me because, you know, you got every mic, every cable, every headphone, every stand is up, you know, and people are out there. Nothing can go wrong.
That's why I love working with you, because you're the safety net for me as a writer, arranger. And I mean this, man. I just never worried about it. Maybe you did.
Oh, God, did I?
But I just never did.
I think I've asked you everything I want to ask you.
Well, this was fun.
Thanks so much, man.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, this is going to be fun, getting my project off the ground and having you part of this is really wonderful.
Well, it's a pleasure to be a part of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you're enjoying Studio V, Southern View Sound and Music's podcast series about audio recording and currently featuring discussions about the grand piano. This podcast episode can be streamed anytime at southernviewsound.com. If you'd like to learn more about Steve, visit stevebartamusic.com. And to learn more about us, visit our website at southernviewsound.com. Thank you for joining us.